Hey guys, I'm your host Adam McCabe and welcome to the Gay Footballers Podcast. Let me first start by apologizing for the slight delay in this episode's release. Since my ACL surgery, I've been really focusing on the rehab of this knee. Things are going great, but it's kind of been my priority the past few weeks. I'm excited to release this new episode that's part two of the interviews with the Charlton Athletic Football Club. For this week's podcast episode, I had the pleasure to interview Gary Ganaw, the player manager of Charlton Invicta. Just a refresher, this past episode, I spoke with Michael Siraj, who's the head of equality, diversity, inclusion at Charlton Athletic, and we spoke about all the things this club is doing to really promote diversity in football. One of those things is the LGBTQ plus affiliated football club, Charlton Invicta, which Gary Ganaw is the manager for. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you guys Gary Ganaw. Gary, thanks for joining me today. Again, at this lovely night here, overlooking the valley at Charlton Athletic Football Club. Player manager of Charlton Invicta. Got a lot to go over today with such an amazing team and an amazing relationship you've got with the club. I want you just to talk about, to begin, how you got involved with football, how long have you been playing for, and I guess your love for the game.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved football for as far back as I can remember, and I think anybody that knows me always knows me watching football, supporting football, you know, travelling all around the country to watch Charlton Athletic games. I think my earliest memory was my dad buying me the England 1990 World Cup kit, and I can remember the shorts were just so small, and I remember Gary Lineker running around wearing them, and I remember that kit, I really do, and I even remember sort of like 10 years after, I think I found it, and obviously it was too small for me then, but it was such an iconic kit. So that's one of my earliest memories, so, you know, probably shortly after the 1990 World Cup, so I would have been sort of seven. Me and my dad never used to go and watch football live. I went with the school on a school trip once to see a Charlton game, and that was in April 1992, and I've actually still got the ticket stub. Unfortunately, we wasn't playing here at the Valley at the time because we were exiled away for 6 or 7 years, and it was actually being played at West Ham's ground just over the river, and I couldn't work out why the game had finished 0-0 and we'd actually scored a goal, and I couldn't work it out because I didn't understand the rules. I didn't understand what had happened, and I said, well, we scored, you know. And obviously we had a goal disallowed for offside, and that was when I sort of started to learn the rules. I used to play football at school, you know, during lunch hours, after school, all through the summer holidays. You literally wouldn't see me because I'd be out playing football for sort of 10 hours every single day. It never stopped. I wish I could play football for 10 hours a day now, you know. And then when I sort of started to hit, you know, my mid-teens, you know, 14s to 16, I knew that I was different from all the other guys. I went to an all-boys school, and I knew there was something different about me, and it took me a while to come to terms with my sexuality. Growing up loving football, I had this personal stigma that I couldn't be an openly gay man and play and love football because it wasn't the norm thing. You know, guys didn't do that, or gay guys didn't do that. You know, you saw gay guys portrayed on the television, and you know, all they were focused on was going out to clubs and you know, the ballet or the opera. Not who would want to go and watch a game of football in the rain or go and play football. So I struggled to come to terms with it. I struggled to come out to my friends and family, and so for that reason alone, I just gave up any interest in playing football because I didn't want to be put in a position where in the changing rooms and even after games, you know, guys asking the questions or talking about girls and that sort of environment, I didn't feel comfortable in, and so I shied away from it, and from 18 until I was 31 I didn't kick a ball.
Wow.
I wish I did, because you know, my dad would tell you when I was younger, I was a quite a tricky little player. And then it was the summer of 2013, and I was 30 at the time. I'd come across the team that was then called Bexley Invicta, and I'd always grown up in Bexley, the borough of Bexley, and I knew that they were an LGBT friendly team, and it's the first time I'd ever heard of a team like that. And I genuinely considered joining the team. I'd just come out of a relationship, and I was sort of evaluating my life and thinking, do you know what, I want to get back into sports, I'd like to get some new friends, and you know, and I thought that was a really good way of doing that. And because the team were open to everybody regardless of ability, and they have quite a good social side, I thought it would be a really good opportunity for me. I didn't actually join until the following summer, so it took me 12 months just to go along to a training session, because I still didn't feel confident. I mean, it'd been so long since I'd kicked a ball, I mean, I didn't really know what the level of the team was like. And I got talking to one of the guys on social media, and he kept on encouraging me to come down for training. And I sort of bit the bullet one Thursday night and went down and never looked back.
So this story obviously hits really home to me. As listeners will kind of know my story, you know, Gary knows this. I spoke to Michael Siraj here at Charleston Athletic earlier today. But the one thing he said was, after we started talking, he said, it amazes me how similar your story and Gary's story is, and or how similar they are, and the fact where you were at a point where you love the game, and then there was this thing that took you away from the game and made you not like the game, not really like yourself, and just that kind of that journey of finding the game again. And I mean, I commend you, because I know that struggle. We've lived that same life. And I also know how freeing it is when you're on the other side. So I want to thank you first and foremost for sharing that with my listeners, and kind of congratulate you on that journey and where you're at now and the good you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, the interesting thing is during that period when I never played, I still watched football, because coming down here to the Valley and watching a game of football, no one's going to ask you about your sexual orientation or, you know, have you got a girlfriend, because that doesn't come into the 90 minutes of football. And so I was still able to watch it. I just couldn't kick a ball, you know, and I wanted to get out there, but, you know, I don't know, I'd say it just took me a long time to find the team. And when I finally did, I said it to one of the guys earlier today, that I'm envious of the youngsters coming through this day and age, because football is more inclusive. You know, we've done a lot of great work, we've still got a lot to do, but it's more accepting this day and age that you can be gay and play football. And I wish, you know, I was 20 something now, because you know, rather than, you know, go back 15 years ago, you know, you never sort of want to turn the clock back. But if I could do it again and just sort of come out at an earlier age, then I would do.
Yeah. I want to talk about being a Charleston Athletic Football Club fan. I'm pretty sure a lot of my listeners will not know who Charleston Athletic is. They won't even know what league they're in. And I know that's maybe a little bit of a sore subject. So, I mean, I do want you to say where they are in the football pyramid, but kind of talk about where Charleston Athletic is as a club, what this club kind of represents, what part of London we're in, to give just a geographical reference, and talk about being a Charleston Athletic fan and growing up with the club.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for people that don't know, Charleston Athletic has got such a rich history, but a history in the community. It's a family club, and it dates back to when the club was first formed, which was in 1905. So we're a relatively new club compared to a lot of the big teams in the UK. It was formed literally just down the road by a group of teenagers that just decided that they wanted to form a football team. The Valley has been here since 1919, I think it was, or 1920. You know, so it's a long time that it's been here. The fans feel a sense of ownership of the club, because they fought to get the team back here. The team was exiled in the mid 80s and had to play at Crystal Palace, who are local rivals. They had to play at West Ham, and the fans fought to get the team back, and they even came down to clear up the pitch. I mean, it was obviously overgrown, and you know, there were shopping trolleys up in the stadium, and it was just a derelict place. And so the fans fought. They formed a political party in the 1990 local elections, and they got enough signatures to force a move home. And that day in 1992, 5th of December 1992, is historic, because it was the day that the club returned home, and we've just recently celebrated 26 years. And to see where the club has been in that 26-year period is remarkable. We had 9 seasons in the Premier League where we were beating the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea and Liverpool home and away. The only team I've never seen them beat is Manchester United. Never. My dad's happy for that, because he's a Man United fan. You know, the club fought the odds. You know, they came up against bigger and better opposition with more money to spend. You know, but we kept defying the odds to stay in the Premier League. We got relegated in 2007. And it's been a bit of a downward spiral since then, but most teams, if you're not in that sort of top six in the Premier League, we'll find themselves in this position. And there's been a lot of big teams that have been relegated from the Premier League, and to then suffer a second successive relegation is, you know, very, very difficult to take, and a lot of teams have done it. Hopefully some of the listeners will be aware of teams like Sunderland and Coventry and Blackburn, and, you know, they've all done it. They've all dropped down to the third division, and that's where we find ourselves at the moment. But we've got a manager, an ex-player, Lee Bowyer, who most people will know him for the wrong reasons, because he's in his playing days was quite a feisty character, was always caught up in fights on the pitch, and you know, but he's a Charlton man through and through. He loves the club, and he's, over the last sort of 12 months, he's just sort of galvanised the fans again, and the fans are proud to be a part of the team again and supporting the team. And hopefully, you know, within the next couple of seasons, we'll get ourselves promoted, if it's not this year, and we'll be looking forward to trying to get back to the Premier League. But as I say, it's always been a club based around the local community, the supporters. We've done something that our local rivals have never managed to do. We won the FA Cup in 1947. We actually were the first ever team in the English Football League to win 2 successive promotions, from the third division to the first division in the 1930s. And we actually finished runners-up the following season, our first ever season in the first division. And I think the 5 years prior to the Second World War, we were actually, we had the best average finish over the top those 5 seasons. And if it wasn't for the war years, I think arguably we probably would have found ourselves as English league champions, and which is a shame, you know, that we never got to fulfill that.
I'm going to continue this quick history lesson here, because I actually don't know about this. And can you talk about the team getting exiled? I had no idea about, or what happened? What was that all about?
Yeah, so in the early 80s, I mean, I was only born in 1983, so unfortunately I wasn't around. But in the early 80s, the team struggled financially, as a lot of teams do still this day and age, probably worse off now than it was then. And I think from memory, the club was within an hour of going bankrupt. A deal was saved, but it got to the point where, you know, the crowds were sort of averaging like 4,000 or 5,000, and, you know, the team was struggling in the second division at the time. And so a decision was made to leave the Valley and go and ground share with Crystal Palace. I think it was for financial terms, but the club would never be better off if they didn't have their own home. And I think other teams have found that it's very difficult. Brighton never had their own home for a very long time when I was little. And so you can never, and I'll talk about this when it comes to Charlton and Victor as well, you need a firm footing to build from. You need a base, you need something to call your own home. And I think until the team got back to the Valley, they would never be able to move forward. I know supporters that went to Crystal Palace week after week to go and watch the team, but when you're travelling probably an hour and a half across London, and travelling across London is not easy for people that have not done it before, especially on a Saturday afternoon, and I think the team were only averaging sort of 1,500, 2,000 supporters. So they didn't have the income, and fortunate they actually got promoted in 1986 to the first division, even though they were playing at Crystal Palace. And for 4 years, the manager then, Lenny Lawrence, kept the team up against all the odds until they finally got relegated. But I think the fans knew that the relegation to the second division in 1990 meant that, and they were constantly selling their best players, but it was all about building to get home. And once they finally got home, and they didn't get promoted to the Premier League for another 6 years, but they were constantly building on and off the pitch to be in a position where they could get themselves promoted to the Premier League. And if you ask a lot of people in the football world over the last 20 years, for teams aspiring to get to the Premier League, it was doing it the Charlton way. That was always the thing, you know. Start off slow, you know, invest in the fans, invest in the stadium, and we became a role model club.
I mean, incredible history lesson right there. Thank you for sharing that. And let's go ahead and talk about, as you alluded to, Charlton Invicta, which was previously Bexley Invicta, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So you finally joined Bexley Invicta. Can you talk about that team, what league you're playing in? And as I think I remember Michael saying, and was this also a team that accepted Allies, or was that only Invicta? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so Bexley Invicta was formed in 2011. The founder and first chairman, Brian Silk, who I know very well and I'm still friends with, and he's actually the chair now of the London Unity League, the league that we play in. The team was set up as an LGBT-friendly, inclusive team, open to everybody, you know, regardless of ability, regardless of sexual orientation. The league is an LGBT-friendly league as well, so we're playing against other teams of the same stature as ourselves. And when I first joined, it was maybe to my own naivety, I expected the team to be full of gay guys because I couldn't get my head around why a straight man would want to play for a gay-friendly team. And that's my own ignorance, I suppose. And I went along to training, and it turned out that two-thirds of the team were straight. And that, to me, made more of an impact because they didn't care. All they wanted to do was play football in an environment that was just friendly and inclusive. And a couple of the guys that I joined with in the same sort of couple of weeks, and they're still with the club now, two brothers, Daniel and Anthony Jenkins, are both straight, but they've played football for other Sunday league teams, and they just didn't like the environment, and they wanted to be in an environment where they felt safe and included. And so there's some really important stories from the Allies, and I think the Allies are the ones that can make the difference in the long term.
No, I mean, I totally agree with you there. Again, speaking with Michael, I mean, Michael Siraj, to me, is the definition of an ally. I mean, he's obviously, he was a big part in creating Charlton Invicta. He's got a big role here with equality and diversity and inclusion at Charlton Athletic. And like you rightly said, it's the ally who's going to help change. And in some ways, the person who we're looking to say to, you know, we are the same. We like football. We play football. We like to drink. We like to go out, have a beer. We like to watch the game. And those are the kind of people we've got to kind of change their attitude and mindset towards what a gay, lesbian, transgender person is. So I totally agree. And I think clubs like Charlton Invicta and the one I play for up in Minnesota, by allowing allies, we're kind of opening that curtain. And yeah, that's the key here, right?
Definitely, 100%. I mean, my partner Sam, you know, the amount of times I've heard him say it over the last couple of seasons is that the most important thing is that, you know, if we're from a minority ourselves and we want to be included, we can't shut out other minorities or anybody else. And you can't put a wall around yourself saying, well, if you're not gay, you can't come in. We're trying to break down barriers. And I think that's the important message that we're trying to get across.
So can you then tell me, how does Bexley Invicta become Charlton Invicta? I'm pretty sure I know you are part of that process one of the big factors. So yeah, go ahead and explain how you make this tremendous, I mean, technically groundbreaking move to being or having this partnership with such a massive club.
So do the short version or the long version?
I mean, I guess short version, we were on a bit of a clock here. But
I had the first season at Bexley Invicta, and we had a good team. We went to the Euro Games in Hamburg in June 2015, and going into the following season, I felt we had a really good chance of competing in the league. We could score goals. We just needed to be a bit better defensively. And for personal reasons, our chairman and our manager decided that they were going to resign over that summer. And it left us in quite a difficult position. We elected a new chairman. We elected a new committee that summer. But we didn't have an experienced manager. A few of the experienced guys didn't want to take over. It's always something that I wanted to get into, coaching. You know, I was still only 32, but I decided that, you know, I felt a sense of comfort with the club. It was my club. I was always born in, bred in Bexley, so Bexley was my local team. And I decided I wanted to give it a go, but I knew I still wanted to play as well. And we had a really difficult first 6 months that season. We were losing games, but not just losing games, we were getting hammered every week, and players were leaving because they were getting fed up that we weren't doing very well. And obviously, naturally, you know, when you've got a group of guys that are making mistakes and not winning games, that with the testosterone, and everyone was sort of arguing, and it just became a bit of a nightmare to try and to take the club forward. And my partner Sam kept telling me that I'm a Charlton boy through and through, and I knew people that worked for the trust, and if I asked them and I sold them a vision that I could get some help from them. And I suppose it all got to a point where I just had to do something, because we were losing players every other week, and I think in that first 6 months we played at four different grounds or four different home venues, because you know, we couldn't afford to keep paying some of the costs for the pitches. We had training sessions where we weren't making enough money to cover the cost, because we only had sort of seven or eight people turn up. And so I just bit the bullet one day and contacted one of the guys from the trust who worked alongside Michael, a guy called Matt Parrish, and a few meetings took place and some initial discussions. I think the first meeting actually took place on my birthday. That's how committed I am. And it just sort of stemmed from there. It never happened overnight. You know, a lot of discussions took place, but it culminated in the first ever Charlton versus Homophobia football tournament down at the Valley, which we took part in. And it just meant from the following season that we started training and playing our home games at the Charlton Athletic Training Ground in Sparrows Lane. We were still under the name of Bexley Invicta at the time. But it just offered us a platform. It's like when I talked about Charlton going back to the Valley, this offered us a chance to settle with a nice home venue, something to build around and a base to build from, and hopefully advertise and entice better players to come along, for people to get a sense of pride to play at a professional football club's training ground, and not a lot of people get the opportunity. And the facilities down there, I think at the time when the pitch was laid, it was one of the only 5G pitches in Europe. So fantastic facilities that we've got. And you know, we started off slow that season, but we gradually grew, and we recruited a number of players, and we ended up winning seven consecutive league games, which was the first time we'd ever done anything like that. That season we finished fourth in the league, which was our highest finish. We went to a tournament in Paris, and we won a fair play trophy while we was out there, which was quite nice. And when we got back in the summer of, or I think it was about June or July 2017, some discussions took place with Michael and Michael's boss, Jason Morgan, about how we could take Invicta to the next level. And naturally, the only progression was to formally bring Invicta under the Community Trust umbrella and to affiliate and rebrand as Charlton Invicta. And that's what we did.
And I just want to make sure the listeners are hearing this. This is the first ever, you know, relationship or partnership where the LGBTQ club is really recognized and supported by the professional football team. And I remember hearing and reading this, and I became incredibly jealous at the first moment I read it. But then I also thought, wow, this is such a ground, kind of breaking moment here. And if other clubs can get involved and do this, and we're slowly starting to see other clubs start some things similar to this. I mean, again, this is really a great way to kind of unveil, you know, that, again, LGBTQ people are the same. We love football. If a club is willing to support us, so should the fans, and they should, you know, support us by the way they behave and how we interact. And again, I just think it's very admirable what you guys have done here. And I guess thank you for, I guess, having that initial urge to come here and kind of start that. So congratulations on that, and thanks.
Thank you. I mean, I don't think going back sort of 5 years ago that I would ever have thought we'd be where we are. And I have to say massive thanks to all the support we've had from Charlton Athletic and the Charlton Athletic Community Trust and the Care Partnership, because they've bought into what we're trying to achieve, and they've supported us. And you know, when you talk about our allies, they are massive allies of everything we're trying to achieve, and it's a massive collaboration. It's not just one side or the other, it's everybody trying to support each other. And when we had the launch event of Charlton Victor down here on the pitch, it was supported by the CEO of the club, by the first team manager, first team coach, assistant manager, so many people, so many charities. Stonewall and Football Versus Homophobia and Kick It Out were all here. We had all the media, Sky Sports and ITV and BBC, and everyone was here covering it. It was a massive, landmark event, and to be the first formally affiliated LGBT friendly team is a massive honour. But we want to get to a position where everybody has that opportunity to play for a team. And when you've got 92 professional clubs in England, in the Football League, you know, it would be great if every team had their own dedicated LGBT friendly team. And I've seen over the last 10 years the way that the women's game has grown, and you know, and we are going to be playing a friendly against the Charlton Athletic women's team, so that's going to be quite a great occasion. And we train alongside them on a Tuesday night, and we've been and watched their games, and they've got some fantastic players. And it just shows you that if you give even the ladies, they've been given the opportunity and the right coaching, and I say they've got some great players, and anybody can play football. And I think that's the message that we're trying to get across.
And so just so I make or kind of get this clear, you guys play and practice at the training grounds. So as Gary just noted, I mean, he's alongside the first team, the women's team, the youth academy.
Yep.
I mean, so it literally, you are a part of the club, basically. Yep. I mean, you're there in the thick of it all. They provide you with the kit.
Yep.
I mean, I see you're wearing a very nice Charlton Athletic jacket right now. I mean, it's literally as if you are a part of this club, and that's just such an amazing thing.
Yeah, definitely. We've been brought into the Charlton family. We're a part of the Charlton family, and we also train alongside the Charlton Athletic Deaf team as well, and we've played some internal friendly training games against them. So, you know, I think the biggest thing for me when we started to get the support from Charlton, the Charlton Athletic Community Trust, was that we gave something back. And so we're always supporting the ladies team, we're supporting the deaf team. We take part once a year on a charity walk from the training ground to the valley for the Upbeats, which is the Charlton Athletic Down Syndrome team. And so we're trying to support all the other community initiatives, because again, if we want their support, we've got to give them ours, and we always have to give something back. And I was so adamant, because this is my club, you know, I'm very good at getting the team to support Charlton, because they'll do what I say because I'm the manager.
So speaking of you being the manager, let's do a quick shift. I know many a player managers, and that is one of the toughest roles, whether you're doing it in a friendly league, if you're doing it in a serious competitive league. A manager player role is one that, I mean, it's tough. You are playing, you're also telling people they've got to be subbed. You're a manager, you have to be super organized, you're the point of contact. I mean, it's loads of stress, I know, and it's basically a job in its own. So just speak about being a player manager for Charlton Victor.
Yeah, it's I don't think I've really talked about this much. It's an absolute nightmare sometimes. Yeah. But I love it. I love the buzz that I get, you know, and as I say, I want to make an impact to people. And if we've got young guys coming through, gay or straight, but maybe it's a straight guy that didn't feel they could play for a team and we're giving them an opportunity, that's a massive impact for us. But yeah, I mean, my mum and dad will tell you though, they support me, they both come and watch. My dad is now the chairman of the team and he's my assistant, so when I'm playing he's on the touchline. My boyfriend Sam is a coach as well on the team. You know, they'll tell you that a minute doesn't go by every single day of the week where I'm working on something for the football team, whether it's something to do with a game or training or whether it's something to do with an event that we're supporting the trust with. So it's more than just managing the team, there's so much more that goes on. But I love being involved. I'm quite a control freak, I suppose, and I think that's why I've stuck with it, because I have a way of doing things and I want them done my way. I'm quite selfish, I suppose, but I don't know, it's just I love the job, I love being involved. And I know, and I've thought about it at times, I thought, you know, maybe this is just too much, do I still want to keep doing both playing and being the manager? But I know if I dropped one or either of the aspects, I would regret it. I know I would. I'd miss not playing, or you know, if I just focused on playing, I'd miss the other side. So yeah, some days I mean, especially in the early days, I mean, you know, before we got involved with Charlton, I mean, I'd be up sort of some nights, sort of 3-4 in the morning, worrying about not having a team for the game the next day. And you know, but it's only a game of football, so it shouldn't really matter. But I took it quite personal. I wanted to do well and I wanted to win. And yeah, I mean, I'm a super organised person. I like to be organised. And as I say, I have a way of doing things and I want them done that way. And I can get a little bit, I'm sure most football managers get that way if things aren't done the way they want. But I've survived. So, you know, and I've built up a lot of good connections within the league and other teams as well, so I'm quite respectful. I mean, we're not going to win every game and I know that, so you know, I'd rather be quite friendly towards teams knowing that we've got to play them again in a few weeks than not be. Yeah, you know, so.
And I mean, I've always thought it's got to be hard when you're the manager and you're saying to your team, you know, stop giving away the ball, let's not lose the ball. And then the next time you get a pass, you give it away. You're like, oh God, I just said don't give the ball away, and here I am giving the ball away. I know it's the funny like oxymoron that happens. But on that note, what position do you play?
I'm a central defender.
Gotcha.
So if I give away the ball, we concede a goal. So, yeah, I try not to. But
have you had any coaching experience? Have you taken a coaching course? I know I saw that like Charlton Athletic offers or is trying to offer some courses.
Yeah, so I actually did my level one FA coaching badge before I became a player manager, because I'd already decided I wanted to get involved. And the guys at the club at the time had said that they would help, Bexley and Victor would help support that, because they would get some coaching, hopefully. And then I started my level two in April last year. The main reason was I was 35. I said I'm 35, just about. I was 35. We just won the league for the first time, and I kind of got to a point where, and I'll say this for the first time because nobody else has heard this, but I was actually going to retire from playing, because I decided enough was enough. I couldn't keep juggling the two. I'm partly glad I didn't, but at the same time, we had a few players that left the club at the end of last season, and so I needed to stick around for this season. We'll see how things go over the next couple of months and into the summer, but you know, I'm not getting any younger, and I would like to push on to the next level, and I really want to coach and make a difference to people. And I've seen players improve, and that's the biggest sense of achievement that I can get, when I see somebody start out and the road that they go on and the journey to become a better player. And that's quite pleasing to see that.
So I remember when Charlton and Victor, when their NVL happened, I don't remember if it was you or Michael, but I think someone said, you know, there was an initial or someone asked you if there was ever an initial fear that by making Charlton and Victor, you would, you know, not alienate fans, but some fans would not approve of it, and it would kind of divide the club. And I mean, that's always an issue, right? Because of course, there's always going to be negative people and negative comments. But was that a worry? And I guess what has been the flip side is, how has the support been from not only the club but the trust and the fans?
Yeah, I think there's always a worry that's out, because we were really putting ourselves out into the public spotlight. You know, not a lot of people had heard of us or knew about us, and then all of a sudden we were just sort of thrown out there one Thursday morning, because we had to keep it under wraps. I remember, because I'd bought a brand new suit and a waistcoat and everything, and I remember trying it on and I couldn't tell anybody, and I took some photos and sent them to a few of my friends, and they were like, are you getting married tomorrow or something? I was like, I can't tell you. Well, I haven't been invited. And, you know, so we kept it really quiet and we didn't tell anybody, and we came down here for the launch, and then it all went out on social media. And I say, naturally, there's going to be an element of negative comments. I think more so people just not understanding the need for the team. But if you're a Charlton fan and you see your club become the first professional football club to really support an LGBT-friendly team, regardless of your own attitude, you should be proud of what they've achieved. And a lot of the Charlton fans will tell you, and I know from being down here for the 20 years, that the work that the club and the community trust did supporting the Kick It Out racism campaigns in the 1990s was massive, and they led the fight against racism in football. And there's no surprise, and I'm not surprised, that Charlton Athletic and the community trust wanted to fight or lead the fight against homophobia in football. So I always knew that's what they're there to, make a difference in the community. And so it never surprised me that they wanted to get actively involved. I think a lot of supporters have, now they know more about us, and you know, they've sort of heard me speak and a few of the guys speak, and we're just normal football fans, you know. Yeah, some of us might be gay, some of us might not be, and yeah, okay, they might see us possibly getting a few privileges here and there, playing and training at the training ground, but you know, it's all for the greater cause. It's, yeah, okay, we're the ones that I suppose we're getting the benefits, but the team's open to everybody, and I mean, that's the important thing, is that anybody can come and join us. You don't have to be gay. You know, you don't have to be straight. You know, anyone, and we are open to everybody. And we've got a real mix of players. We've got one guy from Brazil. We've got a guy that trains with us from Poland. We've got one guy from Ghana. You know, a few from Nigeria. So we've got a real mixture in amongst the team. I think we've got three or four sets of brothers. And it's good because they bring their friends and family down, and you know, and it just helps to send that message. Widespread sort of audience that, especially with this day and age with social media, everyone's heard about the team. So, and I think even one of the straight guys, had somebody at work ask him, why do you play for an LGBT friendly team? And I think his response was, why not? You know, he doesn't have an issue with it, so why should his colleagues or his friends have an issue with the team that he plays for? So, as I say, you're always going to get some comments. I'm old enough and ugly enough to just take it on the chin, and you know, it's not going to affect me. But some of the younger guys or the straight guys possibly might have more of a, you know, it might affect them a bit more. But they shouldn't really, because we're all just there to play football. And the support that we've had, not only from Charlton Athletic and the Charlton Athletic Community Trust, but from anyone that's involved with Charlton Athletic, from all the media, from all the campaigns, the Football Versus Homophobia campaign and Stonewall Rainbow Laces and Kick It Out, and everybody supports us, and the national media support us, and you know, so we've had everybody supporting us, and hopefully I think we only really had some negative comments on the day we launched, but since then, touch wood, you know, everything's been fine. And because we won the league last year, I think a lot of Charlton fans are quite proud of what we achieved.
Besides having, you know, a new home, a place to play and continue on with football, what are you hoping, you know, Charlton and Victor will do for football? What are you hoping the effect it'll have on homophobia in football?
I think, I mean, we've seen since we affiliated as Charlton and Victor, we've seen a couple of other teams already follow the same footsteps. I mean, Norwich set up a team called Proud Canaries FC, in line with their LGBT supporters groups, and the Bristol Panthers recently affiliated with Bristol City to become Bristol City Panthers. We're actually going to play them in a friendly next month, which will be the first time two formally affiliated LGBT friendly teams have played off.
Best of luck.
Yeah, we're going to need it. and that's really good. And I think I've heard some murmurings from other clubs that they're going to sort of set up teams, and I think that's really, really positive. And hopefully we can just encourage more LGBT players, that there is a team out there. It doesn't have to be an LGBT friendly team, but there are teams out there that are inclusive and are open to go and take part, and hopefully we can just make football a more friendly and inclusive environment. It's going to take a long time, but we are making massive inroads, and for us personally, I would like us to enter, possibly set up a second team and enter a mainstream Sunday league. The LUL is a fantastic league, and I think we'd always keep a team in that league because it's sociable and friendly, and it's a good opportunity for players that don't feel so comfortable to go and play. But I think some of the guys that would like to test themselves at a higher level, and ultimately the only way we're ever going to make a difference is if we go and put ourselves out there on a typical Sunday league match. And you know, and we've had it in the past. I mean, we've played games against Sunday league teams and they've said, oh, this is the gay team. Well, we're not just a bunch of gays, you know, but we actually beat them that day, and I think afterwards their manager came over and actually said, you've got a pretty good team. So it shows you how opinions could just change in one 90-minute game, and I think if we went out there and did that, then we'd make more of a difference, because there may be players playing for other Sunday league teams that are in the closet or just don't feel comfortable. And it's like one of our players that actually joined this season, and he's a straight guy, and he's played Sunday league all his life, but he just said he didn't feel that it was inclusive, and that's coming from a straight guy's opinion. So I think we can make a difference if we branch out.
Everyone is waiting for the first gay footballer to come out, and the EPL and or the top leagues in Europe. You know, what do you think, in your opinion, what's holding that potential player back? What can we do to make this happen for them? Is something like Charlton Invicta and the way Charlton Athletic supports that, is that a good start to show there is support for, you know, people like this?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's as, from what I've heard, I don't think it's as much of an issue within professional football clubs, within the teams. I mean, we had a training session run this time last year for the Football Versus Homophobia campaign, and the session was run by the Charlton first team coaching team, and the manager at the time, Carl Robinson, went out on camera afterwards and said that he'd actually spoken to the Charlton first team that morning at training, and because he knew he had this session coming up and that he'd be asked questions, and he actually asked his players, if anyone was to come out now, would any of you have an issue with it? And they all just sort of shook their head as if to say, you know, what are you talking about, boss? You know, and I don't think players really have an issue, because there are, and we all know there are gay players within within professional football. So within that dressing room, there probably might have been somebody, you know, or somebody might have known somebody. And so I don't think it's so much of an issue within the dressing room. I think it's the fans. It's very difficult. You know, when you've got 50,000 fans watching, some of them's not going to have a liking for one player. I mean, you'll have it regardless of whether they're gay or straight. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo used to get a lot of abuse just because he was better than everybody else. You know, and that just seems to be that kind of laddie hooligan-esque sort of feel that football seems to have. You've got the opposing fans as well that sometimes can be quite boisterous against teams. You know, the opposing players that will probably use anything they possibly can to wind up a player. You know, things have been said before about certain players' family members and stuff on the pitch, and then they've reacted and got sent off. So, you know, you can see what players, they try and get in the minds of people sometimes. So there's so many angles. And then I think you've got social media, that this day and age footballers are, you know, they're role models, but they're icons. You've got all these football games and, you know, you see all these messages across social media and a lot goes around. So I think you've got that aspect as well. And I think also the agents have a big role to play in it, because, I mean, I'm speaking from outside, I don't know anything about agents or the fees or anything like that, or the deals, but if you've got a potential big deal on the cards, and they may think that a player coming out might affect the image and the deal, then they might tell the player not to. And so I mean, you've got a lot of things to a lot of reasons why, but for me personally, I'm an optimistic individual, and I've seen a massive difference in football in the UK and across the world over the last 5-6 years, and I think we're not that far off. I know a lot of football fans, and I've seen it from Charlton messages, that they keep saying, I don't care if they're gay or straight, I don't care who they sleep with, I just want them to play football. And that's true, and that's how it should be. And I don't think we're saying that players have to come out if they're gay. It's just football needs to be ready and accepting when that person, if they decide to come out, you know, because even people like Wayne Rooney, his public life is all over the tabloids for who he sleeps with or what he gets up to in his own personal time. And I think that's why, because if it was me and all of a sudden someone took a snap of me kissing a guy or in a gay club, and then my life was thrown all over the papers. And so it's that sort of aspect that you have to sort of look at.
5 years from now, looking at Charlton Invicta, what do you envision? What do you hope for? Are you just a manager at that point? You know, what do you see for the club?
Yeah, I'll be retired by then. it's funny actually. We actually had a debutant yesterday, who one of my dad's friends who played for us for the first time, and he's 42.
Wow!
And he actually got man of the match because he was really good, and he kind of put me to shame, because I'm thinking there's no way I'm still going to be playing in 7 years' time. So I talk to a lot of people that around the club and the league, and they just say, look, you know, just play for as long as you can. But I don't think I'm still going to be playing in. I won't be playing in a couple of years. I know that. So I think 5 years' time, I'll just be sort of coaching the team. It would be really cool to make more of an impact to the LGBT youth. I think that would be quite cool. Speaking from my own personal background, you know, I always struggled, and I know if there was a team there when I was sort of 15, 16, 17, then I might be I'm not saying I would be playing for the Premier League teams now, but I might have made it for a semi-professional team, who knows, you know. And I think it's just giving people the opportunities. But I know one thing's for certain is that we will branch out into a Sunday league.
So the team I play for, I'm from Atlanta and I play for a team there, but the LGBTQ team I play for is based out of Minnesota. And can you at least reserve a game for us
100%.
Here at the Valley?
100%.
To go head to head. Okay, perfect.
I'll have to come out of retirement for that one. Depending on when it is.
I think it'll be sooner than 5 years' time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would definitely love to come and play at the Valley. It's a great stadium. So Gary, I want to thank you for your time. Gary Ginnell.
Yep.
Can you please share your social media channels if you'd like to, for the listeners?
Yeah, of course. So my Twitter account, I have to remember this now, I'm not very good at all this. So you can follow the football team on Twitter, which is at Charlton Invicta. My own personal Twitter account is at GRGIN1983. So, but if you just Google Charlton Invicta, you'll find us.
Oh yeah, you will definitely find it. I know that for a fact. Gary Ginnell, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Cheers, Adam.
Hey guys, so that was a great episode with Gary, and I really hope you enjoyed. As always, please subscribe and give us a thumbs up on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. To my first-time listeners, thank you so much for giving this podcast a chance, and for my returning listeners, thanks for your continued support. If you guys can do me a favor and give us a follow and like on all our social media platforms, they are on Facebook, The Gay Footballers Podcast, on Twitter, TGFPod, and on Instagram, TGFootballersPodcast. If you have any questions, comments, or think of a good individual who could be a part of this podcast, feel free to email me at TGFootballersPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again, as always, guys, and I look forward to the next episode. Cheers!